You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
How you doing, sir? What can I do for you? And I told him I need you to bring back something.
Football back. We in the crowd screaming out football back. It's kickoff time. We in love with the money. These chickens shaking they pom-pom. Shelly, this my honeys. We yelling football back.
A fitting tune to open this week's edition of the 2-Pack Podcast. He is Nick Bornheimer, I am Alex Patakis, and the Mac we're talking about is not Khalil Mack coming to play the Packers this week, who was a monster on Sunday, but Mike McCarthy, who is back in the driver's seat of the Green Bay Packers offense, calling the plays again, took over Tom Clements, and the result, maybe not a direct result, was a 28-7 victory on Sunday over the Dallas Cowboys for the Packers. So, yeah, we got to get into it. We have a busy podcast here for you.
Lot to talk about.
Yes, we do. We do indeed. And we want to start the conversation with that decision from Coach McCarthy, which Jay Glazer broke. Pretty much like hours leading up to the game, I feel like. I didn't even read it until Sunday morning. When did you actually read it?
Sunday morning, and I still didn't fully believe it because I hadn't heard anything. That wasn't even like a thought really coming into the game. He's Alex Patakis, at Alex Patakis on the Twitter.
Thanks for doing my job, yep.
I'm Nick Bornheimer, at Nick Bornheimer. Yeah, I had no idea, and then when, actually, friend Eddie Rutledge broke it to me, and I felt like I was not doing my justice as a professional podcaster here. okay, I'll use that very loosely.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was very surprised to see that, and that it came so late in the season. I think he was just holding on to the hopes that it was an off-season decision that he wanted to stand by, and just ultimately decided that he was best suited for the job.
Yeah, I think it feeds this feeds so many narratives for this team. Obviously, the thought that there has been some type of like rift between McCarthy and Rodgers probably gets back into the stream of consciousness. Based off of like kind of speculation that Rodgers wasn't happy about the decision, which if he isn't, I could understand maybe him being a little disappointed in the inconsistency. But at the same time, I think he's got to learn to live with it because in my mind, and I want to just get to like each of our thoughts, basically, there's a distinct difference when McCarthy is calling the plays, and maybe it's that they executed better, but there was better rhythm. I know Pete Doherty of the Green Bay Press Gazette wrote they got off 81 plays. Remember last year when McCarthy was saying how like running a certain amount of plays was such a huge emphasis? The tempo was better, the balance was better, and sure, yeah, the offensive line was better, and Eddie Lacy was better, and they executed better, all those things. But it looked like a Packer offense we were used to. Short intermediate passes, Randall Cobb being used creatively. So, again, I feel like it's so hard to pinpoint how much the play caller really is responsible for the offensive success. But I'll go back to last year. McCarthy making that decision after a heartbreaking loss and a heartbreaking loss in his personal life with the death of his brother was a rare for a good professional franchise emotional knee-jerk decision. That probably in hindsight, if you think about it, if he had more time to step away from football, I don't think he ever would have made that call.
It was an un-McCarthy-like decision to make, definitely. And yeah, he was called into question a lot after the second half play calling in that Seattle game, and just like you said, I think it was knee-jerk. And because he made that decision, I think he wanted to stand by Clements for as long as he could. And I think Rodgers, and we'll play some cuts later, I don't know how much he truly believes it has to do with the play calling, but I mean, there was a noticeable difference. But I do think it was, and like I've said in the past, I think it's a mixture of a lot of different things. The execution was better, and they rode Eddie Lacy and James Starks, who both ran incredibly well.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Would you agree? And this is not like a revelation. It's just a thought that I honestly, it helps me sleep at night a little bit. Would you agree that McCarthy actually taking back the play calling at least gives us some kind of answer as to whether or not the offense not being what it normally is had anything to do with the play call? It's kind of an admission, right? It's kind of an admission from McCarthy that him not calling plays has some type of impact on them, which I could like sleep better at night knowing at least, you know what, then just wake up one day and start to suck. Like maybe too many voices in the quarterback's ear on game day actually had something to do with this.
Yeah, and we talked to Ben Fennell last week of the NFL Network and a number of different platforms.
A million things, yeah.
But his big thing was, it's the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's.
Right.
I think it might have been a little bit of the X's and O's.
What makes you say that?
I just think, so there were a couple different plays that you did not see run under Tom Clemens. And just like you said, they didn't just, it does provide a little solace that they didn't just wake up one day and start sucking. That first James Jones, kind of where he was, they ran a little like counter play and they swung the ball out to him out of the backfield. And it just looked like that was not something that Tom Clemens would have drawn up in the playbook. There were a lot more bubble screens with Randall Cobb, kind of getting him in the open field.
Well, you said last week, right? You just got to get him in space.
Yeah.
Like, it's head-scratching why a guy who thrives in that scenario isn't given those opportunities. And they gave it to him.
Yeah.
I mean, even on run looks, there were a million times where they would at least fake the bubble screen. And I remember later in the game, they went to that look, and Rodgers kept it instead of giving it to Lacy. And Cobb had an easy, you know, like 12-yard gain on a catch and run.
Yeah. And Rodgers even said post-game that there were a lot. He still has all the liberty and all the freedom to do what he does with the line of scrimmage. And in saying that, that's checking out of plays and looking at coverages and making decisions as the leader of the offense. But he did say that there was less opportunity for him to do that based on the look that the Packers gave versus the look that the defense offered. Still, again, having that same liberty to be able to do that, but he had to check out of less offensive play calls.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that, too, is the emphasis on the run coming into the game, and that there was probably times he went to the line of scrimmage without the option of even checking out of a run. And I don't, and again, that's kind of speculation, but like you said, he kind of hinted at that. Let's actually just play that so we don't just have to keep paraphrasing the quarterback. But here's kind of what he hinted at, not having to make as many decisions at the line of scrimmage, which I think plays into the tempo and the fact that they ran a lot of plays and there was a little bit more fluidity.
I just think we had a lot more plays we felt good about running them without checks. So, you know, we'll have run to pass checks, pass to run checks, and, you know, three plays sometimes in a certain play. Tonight was more plays without a lot of checks.
And another thing that Rodgers said, too, which you alluded to earlier, was that it wasn't necessarily the play calling that made the difference. It was the execution.
Yep, and we've got that right here as well.
I don't think it's been about the play calling. It's about the execution. We haven't executed very well. Today was a little better. Better on third down, better in the red zone, 4 out of 5 in the red zone. And I think we were 50% on third down, so that was obviously gave us some more opportunities. That's why we had 80 plays and kind of had a lean on the run tonight based on the weather and also the way that Eddie and James are running the ball.
So here's where I say, Nick, that this may actually feed the McCarthy-Rodgers narrative. When Rodgers is saying those things post-game, acting like, you know, the difference today was that we executed. And McCarthy is saying basically that he did what he had to do. Actually, like, it reminds me of that quote in 300, where it's like, we do what we were born to do, what we were bred to do. Because, like, it's as if Mike McCarthy were made to call plays for this team. And he made it sound that way when he was saying how tough of a personal decision, but what a right professional decision it was.
Yeah.
I feel as the leader of this football team, I had to make sure I maximize all the opportunities and resources to give our team a chance to win. So personally, it didn't feel very good. It didn't feel good at all. That's a challenge with these types of decisions. But professionally, it was what I felt I needed to do.
So you've got two different two different beliefs here, kind of, or two different opinions on where the offense needed to be in terms of their play caller. You've got Aaron Rodgers saying, it really doesn't make that big of a difference, we just need to execute. And Mike has said that in the past, but it was like this moment of bravado or something from Mike going, hey, you know what? We came this far, and ultimately, I'm the guy who needs to be at the helm.
And I think smart football people will tell you that he is a really good play caller, and it's his greatest strength. He said at the beginning of the year he felt kind of lost on game day. He joked about being bored. He's also hinted at the fact that even when Tom Clements is calling the plays, he has a heavy influence and is probably butting in. So I don't even know if Clements isn't as capable. I just think it's really hard when he could be overridden at any point, and I would rather just have McCarthy in that spot. On top of that, the defense is as good as it's been. I don't know how much they really need him. Like, what's he really doing in that spot? Is he really not thinking about offense and looking at the play sheet? Like, is he waiting to throw a challenge flag at the wrong time like he does so often? No. Like, I don't feel like his influence in other areas of the team has been felt that much.
Yeah, he basically said that post-game, instead of Tom calling the plays and him interjecting, they just swapped that role, which I think McCarthy is ultimately always going to have a larger influence.
Yeah. As he should, though.
Yeah, I mean, he's
a track record of success. I don't get it. Like, I don't get the angst towards him as a play caller when the alternative is not going to be much better because of how damn good their offense was. Did you see the shot, by the way, when Fox went to Clements up in the booth?
Yeah.
How awesome was that? Because they just, obviously Clements is heavily involved, but they just caught him at the right time where he was standing up, like, arms crossed, looking so bored.
It was a perfect moment for them to pan up to Tom.
If I used to call the plays and I didn't any longer, that's exactly how bored I would look, just sitting up in the, like, they punished him. Like, no sideline for you.
Right.
Get upstairs.
Right, because in reality, how much influence did Tom really have? McCarthy had his play sheet and he was doing it all.
Yeah.
And that's where he belongs, or at least that's where you feel like he feels like he belongs.
And you know what? Maybe Clements belongs upstairs, like, seeing things real time, you know, from the eye in the sky and making suggestions. But as far as the McCarthy-Rodgers narrative, like I was saying, you have Rodgers basically saying it was execution, and McCarthy, at least to some degree, believing that him calling plays would make a huge difference. Otherwise, he doesn't make that decision, especially how bad he felt personally, because he was so proud to make these guys have a bigger role in the offense at the beginning of the year, and now he has to kind of take that back, but it's for the good of the team. The other thing that McCarthy obviously did coming into this game, and kind of did all year, was piss Eddie Lacy off.
Yep.
And that was a huge difference. So what do you think of the Lacy revival? Do you think it's there to stay? Because they're just a different team. I was saying it all year. The one thing that's missing when they first started getting out of rhythm, when I believed that it wasn't necessarily a broken passing game, I just thought they didn't have balance. And that last year, the difference when they were beating teams like Detroit, who, let's not slight them, they were a great run defense last year, when they were, you know, pretty much manhandling a team like Seattle in the NFC Championship game, was that they had really good balance. And I think a big part of that was Rodgers getting hurt last year.
Yeah.
Because it forced them to kind of ride Eddie Lacy, where now it's like they're so out of rhythm that, like, you could say, like, Rodgers is hobbled, but not physically, maybe. He's just, like, hobbled in, like, a weird situation where he doesn't have receivers and he's been a little bit inaccurate. So McCarthy basically, you know, punishes Lacy, pisses him off, and says, now guess what? We're going to ride you to the playoffs.
Right. And maybe that's just the way that you have to treat Eddie Lacy, because he's like a really, really big kid in a way. Don't you get that feel from him? He's undisciplined. Right. Well, a kid who likes to drink, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But
rumor has it,
yeah. That's not an official report. But they cut his good buddy, Alonzo Harris, after they both missed curfew. He may or may not have packed on a couple LBs in the offseason.
Which everyone does in the wintertime.
Sure,
unless
sure.
you're a professional athlete with every resource in the world to be in shape. But, you know.
But against the Lions, they just said, look, you're not going to get snaps, you're not going to get reps, and we're punishing you. And he had a really good week of practice, according to the people who were at practice and the coaching staff, and he was in the starting lineup, and guess what? He rushes for over 100 yards. 24 attempts. They ran for 230 on the ground between Lacy and Starks, which is the most a tandem's ever run for. Well, altogether they rushed for 230 yards on the ground, which under McCarthy they've never done before. And I see what you're pulling up right now, and I just came across this story today as well.
Well, I want to give McCarthy a bunch of credit for kind of being Pittsburgh macho and benching Lacy and being like, we'll grind it out with Starks, which, by the way, isn't the worst thing in the world because he's been really good, too.
And healthy this year, which is a nice change.
Yeah, we'll talk more about their 1-2 punch when we get to a fun little segment today we'll play with some quick-hitting things for you. But how about the fact that the savior of the Packers season might not just be Mike McCarthy, it might be Nick Saban, like the devil himself.
So
I'm from South Florida, by the way. People in South Florida hate Nick Saban.
Yeah, understandably so.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell the folks what Ed Warder tweeted?
Right. Again, thank you for reminding me to continue to do my job, as my mechanics are really lacking.
You're doing great, kid.
Since I've no longer been hosting radio shows. Ed Warder of ESPN tweeted yesterday at 12:30, Alabama coach Nick Saban told the Packers only way to change Eddie Lacy's behavior is to take the game away from him. Coaches essentially did against Lions. So the thought that Mike McCarthy scratching his head, like, how do we get this kid to take this game seriously? He's so gifted and can be such an animal. Of him picking up the phone and then, you know, hey, is this Nick? And Saban just being like, I'm not going to be the Alabama. What? Hello? And then, like,
McCarthy can I stop for 1 second?
What?
That was a pretty good McCarthy Pittsburgh.
You think
so? That wasn't bad. And the Saban could use some
hey,
work.
Hey, Nick,
but
it's Mike. I just got to say, you know, Eddie Lacy, he's been, he's had some disciplinary issues. You know, he's got a curfew. Because, you know, he's not going to get, like, specific. Eddie Lacy's got a curfew.
I can't focus on anything else right now. That's pretty impressive.
So, you know, we got to get this guy to take this game seriously. I just wonder if he had anything to say. And then Nick Saban in his head is like, you're so soft, you big bitch. Like, sit him. Like,
what do you mean?
What do you think I do? I make more money than any of you guys on the college level. He's like, I do whatever the hell I want. I go recruit kids in a helicopter. You don't think I have the balls to bench this guy? And then McCarthy's probably like thinking as a self-realization, like, wow, like, I guess I can do that. Thanks. And then that's it. And then that's like the end of the conversation.
God, that back and forth was amazing.
You notice how my attempt to do Saban voice just morphed into me saying, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. I don't know how many times I have to say it. Because that's literally the only like Nick Saban like thing that crosses my mind. Again, that's the South Florida.
What if Nick Saban both coaches Alabama to a national championship and the Packers to a Super Bowl?
Wait a second. Can we start the Nick Saban as, like, the Packers' successor to Mike McCarthy? Like,
oh, my God.
Like, Nick Saban's one career challenge is to whip Eddie Lacy into football shape?
I'll make the Twitter handle right now.
No, because I don't want McCarthy to go anywhere because he's amazing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But how about that, though? Like, honestly, like, that's just a great nugget. Like, the thought of those two guys having a conversation and McCarthy going to Saban and Saban with these wise words of just benches.
Not even wise. That's just
the most
obvious disciplinary course of action in the world.
Yeah.
Oh, he's not obeying rules. Well, don't let him play then.
Yeah, the difference there is like Saban can win a game with anyone at running back because they have a running back factory.
Well,
right?
And also
like,
a Heisman Trophy winner.
Right. Yeah.
But
like,
still,
yeah.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm not saying like they're just system running backs. I'm just saying like Saban has the luxury to do that at
yes.
any point because the next guy you're going to is a top 10 recruit in the country who came to Alabama because he wants to play in the NFL in 3 years. So I just love that detail. But I don't know how much you attribute it to that. I just think whether it was a refocusing or what, Lacy being involved in the offense to me is a huge difference. And again, not to like toot my horn, I'm just saying, I've been saying all year, they need a balance. That's what made them special last year. It wasn't the vertical passing game. It wasn't the fact that they had Jordy and Rodgers was playing. I mean, obviously it's a huge thing when your quarterback's playing at an MVP level. But what made them special against great defenses was their ability to have drives like they had that closed the game. How about a 14-play drive?
Yeah.
Or excuse me, a 12-play drive that ate up the better part of the fourth quarter for a touchdown where they ran it 8 times?
Yeah.
Those are the drives that usually happen against the Packers.
Right. Yeah. Man, Eddie Lacy did, and not to use like a horrible sports cliche, but he ran like a man possessed. He ran like he had purpose, and they just kept feeding him the rock. And even in the vertical passing game, like you said, it's just not there this year. So it's going to come down to more of those reps between Eddie Lacy and James Starks, and that's going to have to be the key to this. The key to success, right? Or is it still back on Aaron Rodgers' shoulder? It's a catch-22.
Yeah, I think we'll get into the offense a little bit more, too, like I said, a little bit later on, because we do have a lot to do today that we want to get to. I have one last question for you. yesterday, if it's Tony Romo, do you believe the Packers still win? Because I saw a lot of that on Twitter yesterday as well. And honestly, I think their defense is good enough where they probably do. Matt Castle sucking is a huge part in just how like hopeless the Cowboys were. But
it's a lot. It's not a 3-point game. The Cowboys, as good as the defense is, the Cowboys score more than a touchdown.
No, yeah. No, of course. Yeah, they score more than a touchdown. It's a one possession, you know, when Dallas actually like shows some signs of life and gets some points on the board, if Tony Romo's under there, you're worried about, oh God, here comes the comeback. But I mean, Demaryius Randall played so well in Sam Shields' absence, who was also playing well against Dez Bryant.
Catch for 9 yards, is that what he ended up with?
Yeah, and they got theirs, and Quentin Rollins had a good game too. Mm-hmm. They got theirs on the ground, which I don't think is any different with Tony Romo. And there was part of me that took solace in the fact that, you know what, we just played the best offensive line we'll play, and there's good offensive lines, but Dallas's offensive line is so special. I mean, they really look at Lael Collins running down the field with Darren McFadden.
That was a cool play.
They're just an unbelievable offensive line. So you knew they were going to get theirs running the ball. It was the one time we saw Daniels, Guyon, Raji, Dayton, those guys being handled, and they withstood it, and they still managed to get off the field. And Castle's a big part of that, but I'm still a believer that this defense is good enough to keep them in games, and we'll really know after Arizona.
The defense is good enough to keep them in games, definitely, but yeah. The offense, stagnant, are they good enough to, you know, seize control and win games? Because that's the defense's job, right? Keep them close enough so that the offense can do what the offense is supposed to do.
Well, I mean, usually it is. At this point, sometimes the defense is dictating the game. And sadly, sometimes the defense is keeping them within striking distance to come from behind, which is they're not very very used to either. But, yeah. All right, we're going to get to – so we didn't even say it off the top, and that's a terrible job. But Matt Harmon is our guest today. I'm excited to talk to him. So Matt Harmon is a fantasy football editor and writer at NFL.com, but also has his own project called Reception Perception. And if you don't follow him on Twitter, at Matt Harmon, M-O-N, at the end of Harmon, underscore B-Y-B. That's for Backyard Banter, thebackyardbanter.com. is where he kind of started Reception Perception, which is a project that's we'll have him sum it up for you. But basically, I feel
that's what we're excited to talk to.
Yeah,
about.
Exactly. It aims to just like quantify receivers in every stretch, like in every single way, how they are against the press, how they are against certain routes, and it's really awesome stuff. And you know, we like to joke around and have fun, and maybe even do a McCarthy voice here or there, but also then provide some type of intelligent analysis, and that's hard for us to do.
Yeah, so we'll outsource that.
So, you know, we had Ben Fennell on last week, who does an amazing job breaking down Packers film all the time. So we're going to talk to Matt Harmon, because we wanted to talk to him last week, actually, but the way that game finished, it was almost like what the receivers did were irrelevant. Richard Rodgers and just that throw were all that mattered, and the defense was really all that mattered, because the defense was lights out. But I want to talk to him. We'll get him on. Devontae Adams, Randall Cobb, and Jordy Nelson were all part of last year's sample of Reception Perception. Again, it's watching every single snap they take. So it's not league-wide yet, but he's getting there. So we'll get some insight from the wide receivers from him. And then we'll play a fun new game. We'll still have hot takes, but we're not necessarily dishing them out ourselves or throwing our relatives under the bus.
Yeah, sorry about that stuff.
Jimbo. we love you, but I think McCarthy's a better answer than Joe Philbin is at this point. So we'll do that coming up. But let's get Matt Harmon on now. He is a fantasy football writer and editor for NFL.com. He has also started the project Reception Perception, which I have just recently been turned on to and become a very big fan of. That you can find at thebackyardbanter.com. It's Matt Harmon. Follow him on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. How's it going, Matt?
It's going really well, guys. I'm happy to talk to you tonight. The regular season is winding down, but still plenty to talk about, of course, as always with the NFL. So thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And we've got a few things we want to pick your brain on. Most importantly, the Packers receiving core. But first and foremost, Alex introed you a little bit. You want to just kind of give a brief description of what it is you do?
Yeah, and about, I guess, some background on Reception Perception, how the idea came about, and kind of how you see this project going.
Sure, yeah. So just about me, I'm a writer, editor at NFL.com, mostly dealing with fantasy football here. But yeah, you mentioned my side hustle, as I like to call it, but really I say that, but that's how I got started on the scene was doing a project called Reception Perception, where I go through and I chart every route that a receiver runs over an 8-game sample size. I do some smaller game sample sizes for footballguys.com in season, but that's just to get kind of a glimpse of a player. But the methodology's full scale view is over an 8-game sample, which is super indicative, I found, of an entire season scale with just, of course, less time being put into the charting. So what I do is I just go over which routes they run, how often they get open on each route, against which coverage they perform best, and then also how often they break tackles, how often they drop passes, how often, like, on a per-route basis they're targeted. So it's really a full-scale view of a wide receiver's game, presented in what I hope and like to think is easy-to-digest and understand form for viewers, because I really think that's what needs to be done with tape study, is it needs to be presented in a qualitative way for people to understand easier and to compare across, you know, like inside one position. So that really, I watch a lot of wide receivers. That's really what the test is.
Yeah, no, and we appreciate the analysis, and actually just like having something that we can look at to kind of tell the story of, like you said, almost a guy's entire season, or at least half the season. So I want to get into some of the Packers receivers, because I was poking around with the numbers, and I know that Jordy, Devontae Adams, and Randall Cobb were all part of last year's sample, which is awesome, because I would imagine, you know, while guys can change year to year, I don't know how different you think Devontae Adams is this year, but I want to start with him, and it kind of sounds like an oversimplistic way to try to sum up Devontae Adams, but a lot of Packers fans, Matt, are wondering, what's he good at?
Yeah, does Devontae Adams do anything well, is the question.
That's pretty harsh.
Yeah, it's hard to paint it that way, but the truth is, going over his reception perception from his rookie year was not good. He was the second worst graded rookie receiver against man coverage, the worst against zone coverage, and the second worst against press coverage. And he only scored above the NFL average on two routes outside of screen passes. So, yeah, it's hard to pinpoint exactly what he did well as a rookie. And I think you're seeing that this year. He's been stretched into, especially during the stretch where he was getting 21, like he had 21 targets in the one game, and then 11, I think, in the following. Or I know, yeah, it was a 36 target pace over the two games. Yeah, that's it. Sorry. And you can really see he was just not suited for that. You know, I know that there was a lot of hype for him in the off season, and I think we really have to be careful how we just. And there's no real like concrete answer of how to discern press reports, because. But I always am a little weary when it's so overwhelming about a player when you really didn't see it on tape in his rookie year, because we know that coaches and quarterbacks like to pump up their young players in the media, and I think that's a lot of what happened with Adams in the offseason, because, like I said, his reception perception scores from his rookie year were so poor, and I think what happened was people also saw, you know, him really play well in the Dallas playoff game. They saw him play well in a primetime game against New England as a rookie, and then they extrapolated that to think that he had a really good rookie season. But on a route-to-route basis, he really graded out very poorly for me. So I was always wary about him coming into this year. I think that he can play well. Like, if they just ask him to run a lot of short routes and maybe do some things after the catch. Like, coming out of school, I thought he was kind of reminiscent of Michael Crabtree, who has had a really nice career revival this year as far as an after-the-catch player, but he's nowhere near the route runner that Michael Crabtree is. So I think that there's a role for him as like a third receiver, but I don't see him ever blossoming into a star, and we certainly have not seen that so far this year.
Right, and he would have been that third receiver on the team if Jordy Nelson wouldn't have suffered the torn ACL in the preseason. So Alex mentioned he was part of your sample size last season. How much are the Packers missing him this year? We know the answer is an extreme amount, but just from your analysis.
Yeah, I think what really got overlooked was that the Packers don't have any, you guys know this, the Packers don't have anybody to stretch the field with Jordy Nelson gone, and Jeff Janis is really the only player on the roster with any sort of just raw, natural speed to get down the field, but he's obviously not at a point in his career where he can be counted on as a full-time receiver. At least that's what the coaching staff thinks. So without Nelson, they don't have anybody to threaten the defense. And one of the things that really stood out about Nelson from his 2000, like, he was the first receiver I ever studied under reception going back to prior to the 2014 season. And what I thought made him, what really, before last year, he was so overlooked as an elite receiver in this league, was the way he separated on post routes was just so effortless. He has such flawless technique outside against press coverage. And I think that's what you're seeing. James Jones, Randall Cobb, and Devontae Adams especially, none of these guys can get off press coverage. So Aaron Rodgers can't have any confidence throwing into the tightest of tight windows on the outside. And that's why they don't have anybody to stretch the field. That's why defenses can just crowd the line and play a lot of press and zone coverage at the line of scrimmage. And the Packers just don't have anybody to beat that right now. So he has been a tremendous loss. It's one that I think a lot of people, myself included, I'll cop to that, overlooked his loss just because they have an elite quarterback. But even the best quarterbacks have to have somebody reliable on the other end of the pass.
Yeah, and I would think you would agree, and you kind of alluded to this, about him being a complete receiver. And he's a great deep threat, but I think people kind of overlook, like you said, I'm just kind of glancing through these numbers, his ability to get off a jam. It's like, as you go week to week, I see, you know, 4 attempts against the press, 100%. 4 attempts against the press, 75%. The Packers don't have a guy who can separate now. So I'm wondering, would you be willing to call him the most complete receiver in the league? Or where would you put him, I guess? Because I feel like he always gets slighted.
Oh, I mean, well, it's hard to say. It's always hard to say if he's the most complete because there are so many good receivers in the NFL now. We're really, and that's part of the reason I wanted to study the position going back to when I started writing, was because I really think that this is a golden era of the NFL receiver. So it's hard to say whether he's the most complete, but I think he has always been a top five guy for me. Going back to that 2013 sample that I studied, I was just so impressed with him. I put him right up there, you know, with guys like Odell Beckham and Calvin Johnson and all, like, some of the best receivers in the league. I think he is right on par with them. And I think this year especially, we've seen that. Sometimes, you always hear that said about artists. Like, the artists don't get famous until after they're dead. And it's like, sometimes, I'm not saying Jordy Nelson's dead, of course, but sometimes you don't know how valuable a player is until they're gone. And I think we're seeing that really finally get amplified with Nelson. I think he is a top five. It's hard to say because there are so many of them, but he, in terms of talent, he's clearly a top five guy in the NFL, at least prior to his ACL injury, and we can just hope that he makes a full rehab from that.
So you would say definitively we could put to bed the idea that Aaron Rodgers, like, makes 87 great, because his accuracy obviously helps, but, I mean, Jordy did a lot for him as well.
Well, yeah, and think about going back to that 2013 season. That was the season that Aaron Rodgers missed a good stretch of the games, and he had to play with Scott Tolzien. And even in that season, Jordy Nelson had to move into the slot because that was also when Randall Cobb was hurt with a broken collarbone for a long stretch. And he had to fill in doing almost a completely different role. He wasn't really the deep threat that year. He was a guy that they just moved chunk plays in the offense with. So, yeah, he can do everything, and absolutely, yeah, he's a great player independent of Aaron Rodgers.
If I'm not mistaken, I think he had, like, a career high in, I want to say, in receiving yards, but I might be making that up because it would be hard to imagine him being more productive than he was in 2011. But I know he was great with Tolzien. So.
So I want to ask you about the guy who, in essence, has had to assume that number one role this season in Randall Cobb. He's been asked to do a little bit. He's been asked to, you know, be a little bit different than he has been in the past, and we saw a little bit in this last game. They schemed him open a little bit more, a couple more bubble screens, get him a little more open in space. But what have you seen from him this year as opposed to last year when he was, you know, primarily that slot guy for the Packers?
Right, and he's still catching most of his passes from the slot. He's still lining up at the slot. But and first of all, before we even get into, like, what he's done this year, he also came out right away in the beginning of the season and said that he was going to be bothered by this shoulder injury that he had. He would be bothered by that throughout the rest of the season. And I'm inclined to believe him based on watching him. That I still think that at some point this season that's bothered him. Like, it's hard if you have consistent pain in your shoulder to absorb hits. And what people overlook about the slot receiver position is that you have to take a lot of punishment there. You know, you're not getting hit by 180-pound cornerbacks on the outside like some of these, you know, left and right receivers are. You're getting hit by linebackers. You're getting hit by bigger safeties. So you take a lot of punishment. And I'm sure that Todd has that shoulder injury at the back of his mind. So I'm not ruling out that he hasn't really been right this whole year. But he did finally look a lot, you know, a lot better. He looked a lot more comfortable extending for pass and getting yards after the catch to me last year. So maybe he's finally getting over the shoulder injury. But independent of that, one thing that I've noticed throughout the NFL this season has been that it's really hard for teams to run their passing offense through slot receivers. You look at Green Bay is the perfect example, but you also look at Philadelphia, you look at Miami. Some of those offenses have, you know, they run through Jordan Matthews and Jarvis Landry, who are both slot receivers, but those offenses have been inconsistent at best, especially their passing game. And I think what you're seeing is it's just really easy for teams to defend that. If you don't have an outside dominating threat like Jordy Nelson, it's a little easier to dictate coverage to the slot receiver position. And, yeah, I think that Cobb is a great player, and I don't want this season to disparage his value because his 2014 reception perception numbers were pretty fantastic. I just think that he is very clearly, you know, it gets a bad rap to call a player a role player, but he has a specific role. He needs to be less to that, and that also, but he needs his teammates to help him out a little, and he's not been getting that this year.
Would you consider New England kind of the exception to the rule there in running their offense through a slot receiver? Does Gronk just kind of nullify all of that? And
I think Gronk functions as the player that dictates coverages for them. Green Bay does not have a player like that. Neither do any of those other teams that we just talked about either. So I do get that a lot it's something that I want to look at more this offseason, the whole slot, running the offense through the slot receiver position. I hope to have an article about that at least some point kind of before the Super Bowl wraps up. But yeah, I think New England is an exception because they have Gronk, and he is really the coverage dictator for that team. Especially, you know, we talked about slot receivers going over the middle. That's where Gronk operates a lot as well. So yeah, I think that's kind of an exception. And also, Julian Edelman played a lot more outside this year before he got hurt than I think people really wanted to recognize. Amendola was primarily their slot receiver when the two would play, and Edelman would function as a flanker. So I think it's a little different in New England.
We're talking with Matt Harmon here. One of the beauties, and we've talked about this especially last week in the Packers offense, is sometimes it's just really grassroots football. Like, it's a lot of slant flat. It's nothing crazy. And the broken plays are always really nice. And kind of that's where their vertical passing game has come from. But they were also doing a lot of winning the past few years with, you know, running slant flat with Jordy and Cobb and, you know, kind of basic West Coast offense. I'm wondering, as you project to next year, and I know you watch a lot of film on the college guys, is there a receiver that you feel like does a lot of those things well, where you can see him kind of fitting into this offense? Because it's never too early to talk draft. We love doing so. And I actually think just a pass target would be something the Packers should at least consider in the first round or two, especially considering how well the defense has played.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there should absolutely be some thought to taking a pass catcher in the first or second round by Green Bay, because Davante Adams is not really working out, because Jordy Nelson, I mean, we mentioned, he's a great player, but he will also be in his 30s coming off a torn ACL. That's a tough rehab to make for an older receiver. So they should definitely, I agree, they should make that investment. One guy that I really like, I think, more than other people is Sterling Shepard out of Oklahoma. He really fits the mold of a pristine route runner and execution type guy. So if Green Bay wants to get back to running a more traditional offense, because like you mentioned, really the plays they've been successful on this year have been that sort of, you know, backyard, almost, you know, Johnny Manziel style, like Aaron Rodgers just go out there and make play on a broken assignment from the defense. So I think if they want to get back to a more traditional West Coast offense, I think Sterling Shepard would be a great fit. But I also really like, again, he'll probably go higher than the Packers can nab him, but Corey Coleman from Baylor is a really impressive player who's definitely not there as a route runner yet. He comes from a really stripped-down offense. But he's a high-end athlete, a guy that I think they could stick outside opposite Jordy Nelson and have Cobb in the slot. And he's a guy that could threaten defenses on broken plays. He could bring a vertical element if Jordy doesn't come back all the way as a seam ripper. I would love that fit there. I don't know if it's going to happen. And then one mid-round guy, or maybe, you know, I'm not quite sure. I never know at this time of year where guys are going to go in the draft. But as far as just a lesser-known talent, Rashard Higgins from Colorado State, I think compares pretty favorably to Randall Cobb, but can play a little bit more outside. A guy who's really underrated as a route runner, but is a strong after-the-catch player. He seems like a guy, just watching him, he seems like a guy that Green Bay would be really into.
Are you a, I have no clue if he'll be there, are you a Josh Dobson guy? Because he's, like, ball skills are through the roof with that guy.
Absolutely, I love Dobson. I'm a big fan of Treadwell, too. He's clearly the top guy to me, but, like, if you really wanted, I wouldn't laugh you out of the room if you wanted to argue that Josh Dobson was the best receiver in this draft class. He is so impressive. I was on RotoViz Radio a few weeks, actually I think about a month ago now, and I was talking to the guys after the show, and one of the hosts, Matthew Friedman, actually compared him to DeAndre Hopkins, and I think that's a really apt comparison. Just like Hopkins, I don't think Dobson has like one elite, you know, physical attribute, but he just is so good at executing his assignments, at getting separation and playing the ball in the air. Like, just making, he gets the most out of everything he has, just like Hopkins does. I think that you could see Dobson take a similar career path.
Talking with Matt Harmon, and I want to get in at least one more question about a receiver who's currently on the roster, though I'm not even sure if he's in the country right now. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to see Ty Montgomery, who hasn't been active for a number of weeks now, but did show a lot of promise early on, and it looked like Rodgers was really starting to confide in him a little bit and show that he trusted him. Do you think that he could be a pivotal part of the offense going into the postseason, if you've even had a good chance to study him at all?
Yeah, I haven't gotten to chart any of his games with reception perception yet, but just going back to my college evaluation of him and a little bit of what I saw in the pros, he's an interesting guy because he had a really great season for Stanford back in 2013, but he didn't progress at all into his 2014 season. Actually, I think he really regressed as a player. But what could make him interesting is that he is very good after the catch. He's kind of a big, strong guy, like somewhere in the neighborhood of Cordero Patterson and Randall Cobb. Like, he's not as technically sound as Cobb, but he's also not as physically overwhelming as Cordero Patterson. So he's kind of a weird player like that that I never really got a good handle on, but I think he can certainly offer something to Green Bay in a role player perspective. I don't think you ever want him to really be either your first, your number one or your number two receiver, but he can certainly help the offense, you know, create plays, and I think that's what they're lacking right now. Like, they just don't have any playmakers right now. If Cobb is not 100% and is stretched out in his comfortable role, Adams is playing poorly, James Jones is one of the more inconsistent receivers in the league, they just don't have a guy who they can consistently rely on to, when they throw the football to him, he can make plays after the catch. And I think Montgomery could offer that, like, kind of come in as an ancillary weapon for the playoff run. That would be interesting to watch.
Matt Harmon _BYB, where you can find him on Twitter, thebackyardbanter.com, for all of his work on reception perception. We appreciate you taking the time and really appreciate the work that you're doing, watching all these wide receivers so that we could be a little bit more well-informed on them. So thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. This is a lot of fun. It's good talk.
Always good talking ball. Thanks, man. Thanks to Matt Harmon for joining us now. We'll wrap up with some quick hitters because we didn't even have time to get to some pretty major storylines at the beginning of the podcast because of just how damn much is going on right now with this team. So it's time to head to the kitchen. It's time to go find our halal guy and see just how hot the block is. In a little game we're going to call Hot or Not. That's right. Ripping it off of everyone's favorite website in like the early 2000s for like a minute until like Facebook was formed and then it was all over. But I'm going to throw you some takes.
Okay.
There are things I've seen on Twitter. There are things I may believe myself. There are things that JS Comments might have even tweeted, and they could be very outlandish. And you're going to tell me, and I'm going to tell you as well, Whether or not it's hot, hot meaning a piping hot take, that's probably totally outlandish. Not meaning, you know what, that's pretty well reasoned.
So sure.
You ready for hot or not?
I'm ready.
This is going to be such a fun game. All right, hot or not, Mike Daniels, who just signed a $42 million four-year contract extension containing $12 million in a signing bonus and $22 million over the first 15 months, front-loaded. Ted, you're awesome. But hot or not, Mike Daniels, the best player on the Packers defense by far.
Oof. By far might be a stretch, but I say not. I don't think it's that hot, and I'll tell you why. This is his fourth year, correct?
Yes.
And in that time, he's become a staple of that defense. And we've talked about it on some of the previous podcasts. He, whether he's making a play or not, he's blocking gaps and he's taking on blockers, and he's been the most consistent part of that defense over the past two or three years, I'd say without question. I think they actually got him at a steal. It sounds crazy for us average Joes to say $42 million is a steal, but I think if he would have hit free agency, he would have made a lot of money, whether it was with the Packers or elsewhere. I don't think that's that much of a hot take. I know that we've got a promising young secondary and Clay Matthews, who is Clay Matthews and does whatever it is he does. He's just a freak athlete. I still have more fun watching Mike Daniels, and I think that though it could be a touch of a stretch to say by far, you could make a really strong argument that he is the best or the most important player on that defense.
I am going not as well. I think you're right as far as the money goes and it actually being a pretty solid deal. Didn't overpay for him, probably could have got more. A big part of that is that the next guy in the NFL always makes more than the previous guy. He's now the third highest paid 3-4 defensive end. J.J. Watt averages $16.7 million a year.
Okay, well, yeah.
Calais Campbell of Arizona, $11 million a year. Mike Daniels comes in at $10.5 million. And you can make the argument he's, I guess you can't make the argument he's as good as J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt has his sack numbers, and they use him now as an edge rusher. But Mike Daniels is as dominant as anyone. It took until the Dallas game, and their offensive line is freakish good, to see anyone actually like win matchups somewhat consistently against him. Mike McCarthy calls him a buzzsaw. Ben Fennel last week on this podcast called him the disruptor. I just like to watch him eat humans and like throw them up on the quarterback's lap.
He does.
I mean, he just... The leverage he gets, he's always like the lowest guy. They always say lowest man wins. And no matter how big an offensive lineman is, he gets under their pads and just puts them on skates and makes them look absolutely silly. And it's an absolute joy to watch the big fella eat. And I think they have a lot of good players on D, but I don't think it's a stretch to say at all. It's not hot to say he's the best one because Clay Matthews, what did Ben say last week? He's just faster, stronger, and just like tries harder. Like he's just like...
Yeah, I don't even know. He just is more... In the field of vision,
right?
He just flies all over the field,
and his skill set isn't so special where you're like, wow. I think the second best player on the D, you could make the argument, is already becoming Clayton Dix, but Mike Daniels to me is head and shoulders above everybody else. All right, hot or not, Nikki, that if Mike McCarthy were calling plays all year and he didn't make the knee jerk decision that he made in the offseason, that they would be sitting with double digit wins in the driver's seat of the NFC.
Ooh, so. They're 9-4 right now, so that's saying they would have won one more game.
Okay, well, no, driver's seat of the NFC. See, you got to throw these like little qualifiers in at the end to make them really hot.
Okay,
a reason person could say, well, if Crosby makes a field goal,
driver's seat of the NFC. So then that's a hot take because Carolina's Carolina.
But if the Packers had Mike McCarthy, they'd beaten Carolina.
Yeah,
see, this is all,
okay,
it's all part of it.
Fine. I'll play your game.
Well, I hope it's a point.
I think that is a hot take. And I do think
that... Are we going piping hot? Are we going scorching hot? Are we going face melting hot?
Define the difference between piping and scorching.
I think face melting hot is probably the hottest.
Okay. I'll say it's a piping hot take because, like Aaron Rodgers said post-game, it's all about execution. And they still don't have Jordy Nelson. And the wide receivers for a period of time still couldn't get open. The offense wasn't clicking. And Aaron Rodgers wasn't Aaron Rodgers for a period of time. I think Mike McCarthy... at the end of the day, is going to call plays and scheme better than Tom Clements did over the course of the season to this point. But to say that they would be in the driver's seat, and that caveat, the driver's seat of the NFC, I think makes it a hot take.
I agree. I would go not quite like face melting hot, but, you know, piping hot, like you said, because I think a big part of it was execution. They got thoroughly outplayed against Carolina. It's a driver's seat of the NFC when there's an undefeated team. It's just ridiculous. We don't know how they're going to fare against Arizona. And I still don't know if for sure that they're going to be able to, like, handily win that game. I don't think McCarthy, while they're much better with him calling plays, I don't know that he fixes the drop passes that we've seen. I don't know if he makes Devontae Adams any better. We just spent time talking to Harmon about how he's not particularly good at anything. So I don't know if McCarthy changes that. I don't know if Adams gets as many targets if McCarthy is, in fact, calling the plays. So I'm going with that being a piping hot take. I'm laughing because we do have a live studio audience, but the live studio audience happens to be choking right now. So I actually hope everything is okay.
Yeah, we might have to perform the Heimlich.
Can we get a thumbs up from the live studio audience?
She's a little flushed, but it seems to be okay.
That all is going to be well. All right, we can proceed. It's not even that we mind the noise. We're just making sure that we don't have some type of situation on our hands.
Right. Okay, so we agree.
Live studio audience.
We're 2-for-2 on agreeing so far.
Yes, we are. All right, final one, hot or not, because we got to wrap this bad boy up. The Packers can and will ride Eddie Lacy and James Starks, the 1-2 punch, all the way to San Francisco. Super Bowl.
Okay.
50, right? 50?
It is 50, and all right. Is in San Francisco. So there's so many different things that hinge on the Packers being able to make it to San Francisco, and I do think a large portion of it is the 1-2 punch in Lacy and Starks, and those, 75 offensive snaps per game, and whether it's 35 or 40 attempts going to those running backs, I think that's a huge part of it now. I don't know. No, it's not a hot take. I don't think it's a hot take. Do I think it's likely? I guess it's to be determined. They've got 3 games. Yeah. Under Mike McCarthy's tutelage, granted they've been under his tutelage all season, but under his play calling tutelage, I don't think it's an extremely hot take. I don't think it's a hot take at all because I think that at the beginning of the season I picked them, and not being a homer, not being biased because I didn't pick them last season when arguably they should have been there. I thought that this team had enough talent. Granted, this was before the Jordy injury and all of that, but I think they have enough talent to be there, and I think that you have to rely on the running game to be able to make it because they don't have that vertical passing game like they've had in the past. So my long-winded version answering your question is no, it's not a hot take. I don't know if it's going to happen, but yeah.
I agree. Send it back. It ain't hot. Can you warm this up, please? Because look what they did on Sunday. Dallas is by no means a dynamic run-stopping team. Again, I was just reading the Pete Doherty Press Gazette story of Mike McCarthy taking over and the differences. 35 carries for almost 200 yards rushing. Like, when's the last time you saw the Packers attempt that many plays on the ground? I think they're very self-aware right
now. It hasn't happened under McCarthy.
They're self-aware that with Aaron Rodgers just sitting back in the shotgun and, an incompletion on first down, a run on second down, and third and long and incompletion isn't going to get it done. And especially with the Seattle is playing right now, especially the way that Arizona can beat you by outscoring you and their defense playing really well. But I do believe that the Packers can, throw all the cliches out there that you want, like mano a mano, like games won in the trenches, that their offensive line, when healthy, and let's not forget, they're getting healthier.
And they're
whether
back,
it's Corey Lindsey or JC.
I was going to say, JC looked pretty dang good.
Yeah, like whoever it is at center with a healthy offensive line, they can run the ball down your throats. And a rejuvenated Lacy, like we talked about, who's angry now after Nick Saban told Mike McCarthy to bench him, which is still outstanding. I think they can do it. And I think they did it last year. And again, I think last year, had Brandon Bostic caught the onside kick, or had Morgan Burnett maybe not slid down with Julius Peppers' instruction, I'm just saying, had they gone to the Super Bowl,
yeah. It
would have been on the back of Eddie Lacy and the defense.
I agree.
I mean, Rodgers played pretty well against Dallas, but it would have been because they came to Seattle and beat the hell out of Seattle offense. Like, the Packers' defense beat the hell out of their offense. And while the numbers weren't eye-popping, they just ran right at them.
Yeah.
Like, Michael Bennett, Bobby Wagner, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, cool. Like, we're going to run at you because we've had success doing this for a better portion of the season. So, yeah, dude, I think they can do it. Whether or not I'm, like, picking them as my Super Bowl favorite right now, I don't know. But they can beat you running and playing D, which is kind of what they're going to have to do. Oakland will be a good test. Do you like them against Oakland on the road this weekend?
I do. I think the the win, and they did have a big win in Denver, albeit against Brock Osweiler. But Denver's a good team. You saw what they did to the Packers earlier this season. They've got a great defense. I don't think that Denver's firing on all cylinders, so I don't know how much you can read.
I almost threw the Packers-Denver game out. That was like Peyton Manning's last hurrah.
Yeah.
I was like, that might be the last time we ever see Peyton Manning look like a prolific passer.
Yeah. But, I mean, Khalil Mack is going to be a lot to handle for that offensive line.
And I won't be mad at Charles Woodson as two picks. I just won't.
I know. I saw some numbers today that he's, I mean, there's a legitimate argument for him to, I mean, defensive player of the year is strong, but he at his age, what he's doing, it's amazing.
He's like all pro. If there were a Jim Thorpe Award in NFL, DB of the year, maybe he could. Although Josh Norman would win, but
right. But at his age, it's amazing what he's doing, and to think he's been in Oakland for 3 or 4 years now, and he was
so weird.
I know. So I like their young quarterback. I think Derek Carr is good. I think Amari Cooper is really good. So he's
Demarius, though. Randall.
It'll be a good test. Who knows if Sam Shields is healthy? And who knows if he's even on him or if it's Randall's time to shine? All that being said, I do like Green Bay this week. I don't even know. Are we going to do picks? Do we know if the lines have even been released or should we just save it? We're running out of time.
At the time that this is recorded, Monday Night Football is being played. Whatever the line is, it's going to change drastically. I think the Packers opened last week at like -4, which I thought was way too low. Oh, I guess it didn't move that much, but still, everyone had to be all over.
So we'll keep it simple.
All over that.
We'll keep it simple. It's a good road test, but I like Green Bay right now, and I think it's going to kind of predicate how we should feel about them playing on the road again in Arizona. What are your thoughts on the game?
I don't know. Like I said, I always hate to sound like a homer, but I do like them, and they have been playing better. Oakland's good. Their passing game, I think, presents a bit of a challenge because Derek Carr's been really good, and Derek Carr and Aaron Rodgers have had comparable numbers pretty much until Rodgers started to just have terrible weeks, and then Carr kind of surpassed him. But I like the Packers secondary enough. I like their ability to generate pressure enough to where I don't see them just giving up a ton of points on the road like, you know, maybe they would have in years past, and they travel out west to face like San Francisco or teams like that. So I would take them, and you know, all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, potentially 11-5 or 12-4 if all goes really well, and you know, that like few weeks stretch not looking as drastic going into the postseason. Although I got my eye on what's going on in Seattle, though.
I know.
Do you feel like, are you dreading that, like?
So right now,
second round Packers, first round Packers hosting Seahawks. Oh my God!
I think Seattle's probably going to finish with the 5 seed, and the Packers will probably be the 3 seed unless they beat Arizona and something happens, they get a bye. It could happen, and that'd be a tough matchup. Anytime you play Seattle, I mean, they've kind of got our number.
Yeah, but I mean, I'd be excited for it. I would just rather play somebody else. Like, I think they could win that, especially at home.
I'd almost rather play Carolina again.
Whoa. Cam Newton's got something to say about that. All right, thanks to the live studio audience. Thanks to Matt Harmon. Thanks to those who provided the hot takes that we don't credit to anyone because they're just random things that we feel like really out of touch people are saying, or maybe not.
Maybe not, because we thought two of them weren't that hot.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Maybe we need to beef them up. Maybe we've got to go to JS Comments.
we got to just rip them straight off JS Comments, which, by the way, like kind of gave a tip of the cap to one of our really good friends earlier today, which was really cool.
I didn't see it. We'll talk about it later.
At GNitzel16, I feel like was kind of like backhandedly referenced in a JS comment, but not directly referenced.
Like a subtweet?
I think Gabe was kind of honored. I think it was like his I belong moment, like Aaron Rodgers.
Gabe's coming up in the world, man.
He sure is. All right, thanks to everybody for listening. You can find us next week right here at PackersTalk.net. Thanks for them for hosting us. And again, Matt Harmon for coming on and shedding some light on the Packers receiver group. Before you know it, we're going to sit here every week and talk draft, which I can't wait to do.
Yeah.
But you should go check out some of those some videos on Josh Doxson and Corey Coleman and those guys. It'll get you a little bit excited for the Packers to potentially take a pass catcher. That'll do it for us. We'll talk to you next week right here on PackersTalk.net. It's the 2-Pack.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.